Hello, guys. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Black Spin Global Podcast. I am your host, Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And yeah, guys, welcome back after a very long... it's been a minute. We can't even say a break because it wasn't like we said the sake of break. It was more of like...
Silence. Exactly. Very apt. No,
you know what?
Go on. You go first. No, I'm just going to say... You go.
This is how you know it's been such a long time. Look at us. We don't even know who should be speaking next. I personally feel like it's just a mix of different stuff. Like, I think it's not even a mix. To be real, we need to be honest with our listeners. It's just honestly life, really and truly. It's that simple. I mean, you need to remember, I mean, for those who don't know, it's only Eugene and I that really do all of this. This, and it's annoying because in my head it's like, oh, I want to do this, I want us to do this, I want to do that. But life makes it a bit, you know, harder. And
bit,
I feel like
a bit hard, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, there was a lot going on. So it was kind of like, you know, but luckily we still have the Instagram page anyways. We have the Twitter pages. So it's not like the podcast is the only way that we do these things. So exactly. I think that's another, I think we kind of forget that as well, is that, and I think this long quote unquote break is what made us realize that, yeah, actually, we still have other platforms where we share other stuff. So even if we're not podding, you know, we're keeping you updated, like live and direct through Instagram, through Twitter. So, yeah.
No, exactly. And I mean, the last episode we recorded was what?
It was the first pod.
Australian Open, yeah, of the year. Mm-hmm. So, and obviously that's the first Grand Slam of the year as well. And like, yeah, we kind of gave pretty comprehensive, like, rundown or like overview of what happened in Australia. So
yeah,
I am pleased with that. And obviously, yeah, like I said, like you just said, it's not ideal that like we've been away for so long, but yeah, life has kind of been happening like in between, like a lot of things. So, but yeah, we've been in touch or kind of keeping things kind of going on social media, like you said, on Twitter and Instagram. So it's not like we've been completely ghost, like we've been present like on the socials. So yeah, but there's more coming, and we've been working, like we're gonna there's lots to catch up on.
That's the thing. It's not like we're here chilling. We're not just chilling. We're not here just because we're not podding does not mean like we doing shit behind the scenes.
So the name of this episode is called Since We've Been Gone.
Shout out to day 26. Yo. For those of you who know day 26. Yeah. Shout out to Diddy. Shout out to Make It a Band. That song, yeah. That is that whole day 26 album is a true R&B album, but
I'm not gonna lie to you. When I came up with the title, I was like thinking, hang on a minute, Since You've Been Gone, that's a song title. But who you just mentioned is not who I thought of.
Oh, who did you think? Oh, Kelly Clarkson. Wow. This is black people live only. This is African people live only. And this nigga's out here thinking about her. But to be fair, that Kelly Clarkson song is a fucking banger.
It takes me back to uni. Like, yeah.
Well, damn.
For me. An old age.
For me, it takes me back to my, you know, my younger days. But yeah, either way, it shows that we have some songs titled, like they had the same title and they're both great, Day 26 and Kelly Clarkson. Yeah, if you don't know any of those songs, guys, go jump to it. Really good songs.
Shouts out. So yeah, like I said, we've been working.
Yeah,
and a lot of things have been kind of going on, like in the background, like in terms of platform. So, yeah, something I want to talk about, but obviously not—I don't want to spend too long talking about it—is Wimbledon. So, Wimbledon, the accreditation like process of applying for press accreditation, very exciting. We missed out last year and the year before. I really felt like last year we would get it just because obviously we were like at most of the LTA grass court events. Which is great, like Eastbourne. We also had Birmingham, but we didn't end up going
because there was no black players.
Queens as well, but yeah, Eastbourne was the one, like because obviously we had the whole Savigno experience as well. But yeah, to come back to Wimbledon, we've literally gone the kind of official route in terms of applying before the deadline, getting the applications in, and like, yeah, basically the whole process. And I kind of want to talk about it in more detail. Like, I might do like a thread, like on Twitter or something, just like breaking it down, just because I think it's quite interesting. And I think it's like maybe a side of the industry, like, you know, your normal tennis fan probably wouldn't really be aware of. And I do think it's quite interesting as well. Like,
just
to kind of be aware of like, yeah, what the process is basically. So,
and there might be smaller platforms who don't even know that they could even have the opportunity 100%, to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one of the things as well. What I aim, there's a lot of things I want to aim with Black Spin, but definitely one of the things is that I definitely want us to be one of the first people to show that we can show tennis in so many different ways and so many different aspects rather than traditional ways. And this is no disrespect to the journalists or the media people in tennis. It's just that we need to do different things because we're in a different generation, different world, and it's like we're doing the same things. And we say this all the time, this sport is so entertaining, this sport is so big. And yeah, and I think a lot of these smaller platforms, especially like Miles, for instance, his platform, like the way he does his posts and the way it's so engaging, these are the type of people that we need in the sports. So I'm looking forward to it. I know I'm definitely going to be vlogging. I tried to do that last year. You know what, I even tried, I did it, I had the videos, but I wasn't doing it properly because I was actually kind of nervous because I was like, people are gonna look at me like I'm stupid. But then
wait, was this at Wimbledon or do you mean Eastbourne?
I had okay. I did like a full-on you were
doing your thing in Eastbourne.
I know, but I was still really nervous. But this year I don't give a fuck, I'm doing it.
Yeah, so basically that's kind of all in the work, so we wait to hear back. It's obviously now it's the start of April. We hear back, I think, mid-April or like mid to late April, whether or not we've been successful. So fingers crossed and pray for us, guys. Like, I am very hopeful, as always. I'm the optimist. So I do feel like we're gonna get it.
Hopefully, please.
It's not no hope, Lucy. It's happening. But again, okay. don't you may be surprised, but like you have to pay. So you know, mm-mm. your organization has to pay for, you know, their kind of journalists to be present on site. It's not free. So, and obviously we are an independent like platform. So all the cost is coming from us, which of course, like when you're kind of starting out, like, you know, you're going to have to like foot the bill for quite a few things. So
that was a bit of a
surprise, but then at the same time, like when you kind of, weigh everything up, like it's not that much of a, you know.
I do wonder if it's all Grand Slams or if it's just Wimbledon.
No, I think it's all Grand Slams. Yeah, okay. I think it's all Grand Slams, and obviously so this will be our first Grand Slam like event.
So can you imagine for US Open? Because you know these Americans, they like to charge. Oh my god!
And inflation. I've got a feeling though, and I don't know this obviously, but I do feel like Wimbledon will probably be the most expensive, just because it's like the British pound. As opposed to like,
I generally think US Open will be the most expensive. So yeah. US Open tickets alone are so expensive.
I don't know, because do you remember last year we kind of got into like dialogue of like some of our US followers when we were talking about like, yeah, tickets
they were saying that I've literally seen it on Ticketmaster. Like I'm talking about day one tickets for a good seat. You're paying like $200-$300.
Wow. Okay.
But then again, I've always said this. I think the spending culture in America, the spending culture in Europe is very different.
Yeah, it's different.
Like
definitely.
If you say £200 for a day one good seat ticket for Wimbledon in the UK, they will look at you and say, "Are you stupid?" And they won't do it. If you say in America, it will make sense. Yeah. I just feel like their spending behavior is very different from Europeans. So then again, remember, they earn way more. So
I was going to say really the salary, it's much better, salaries.
Especially
in
people
America
in New
as
York
to
and stuff. So
Europe,
yeah.
No, definitely. So yeah, guys, we'll keep you posted with the Wimbledon accreditation. But like I said, just pray for us.
Please.
We had an interview with Eric Matulier. Thank you. So he is the founder or co-founder of Fury Sport, and they're like a racket slash tennis apparel company. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was really great chat. Like, obviously, yeah. Eric is based in New York. He's of Haitian descent as well, which is cool. So we just basically spoke to him about his background and, like, yeah, kind of, you know, his inward journey into, like, you know, tennis. I don't even know what you really called it, but, like, yeah, tennis fashion slash tennis equipment, you know, manufacturing. So industry. Yeah, that was a really, yeah, exactly. That was a really, really good and insightful conversation, and we'll be releasing
and inspiring.
That.
Inspiring.
Very, very inspiring. Like, a lot of game was shared, yeah, like on that. So massive shouts out to Eric there for that. And also, yeah, Jordan Thompson, bloody tennis player, Jordan Sanford. shouts out to Jordan, friend of the pod. We've had her on a few times. She was the one that connected us. So yeah, it was great that we actually were able to speak to Eric. And yeah, like, just quickly, some news back to Wimbledon since you've been away. Like, this news broke, what, last week, Thursday or Friday, about Wimbledon allowing Russian and Belarusian players to compete, yep, this year. I wasn't really that surprised. I don't know what your kind of thoughts were, or initial.
Listen, Wimbledon's not looking to pay them fines again. They're not looking like they had to pay like millions in fines. Ain't nobody doing that shit. Like, ain't nobody doing that shit.
And obviously, Wimbledon last year too, no ranking points, which was a bit pointless, literally.
All of that. But on top of all of that, Eugene, look at the top players. Who won the Australian Open? Sabalenka. Who was the runner up for the Australian Open? A Russian. Have you seen Daniil Medvedev this year? He's literally been winning back to back. Like, the Belarusians and the Russian players are really, like, you know, they're at the top right now. So it's like, what are you going to do? You're just going to, you know, like.
When it broke, I was like, oh, who's going to tell Marta Kostyuk, you know, the Ukrainian? Like, because, you know, she's been on, like, the WTA and, like, ATP, basically the tennis governing bodies. She wants to see, like, Russian and Belarusian players banned, like, and not able to compete, full stop, which I think is very extreme.
But the thing is, you need to remember as well, Wimbledon not only said they can play, but it also, Belarusian and Russian players have to, like, sign an agreement saying that they do not support the war. So they really have gone, like, really extreme. And even by doing that, people are still complaining. And to me, the way I see it is, so it seems like there's no solution to this, you know. All these players have voiced many times that, you know, they're supporting Ukrainians, you know, they're doing all that, and they're not part of, like, the war, except one player who messed everything up, and she wore a bloody Russian football team top walking into a match.
Is that Indian Wells or Miami?
It was Indian Wells.
It was Potapova, wasn't it?
It was Potapova.
Yeah, Spartak Moscow.
And my number one thing when that happened, I was like, you guys are not even clocking that she's doing this for clout. And it worked, because for a couple of days, people were literally talking about her because she didn't care about the football team, because apparently apparently, from what I was reading from the interviews, one of the journalists asked her for during a press conference, oh, okay, what's your favorite, like, who's your favorite player? My girl couldn't even name one.
No,
she couldn't even laugh, and he didn't say Ronaldinho.
What I read from her, I think it was just Associated Press, but it was an official quote from her. So she said basically, mm-hmm, that team, Spartak Moscow, mm-hmm, they have a close, like, place in her heart because her dad helped build the stadium. So, as in the stadium where they play. So she was like, basically, ever since then, like, they've always, like, she's had a close affinity, like, to the club, which I thought was, you know what, fair enough. But then at the same time,
it's boneheaded
to do that when you're, as a Russian, you're not playing under the Russian flag for obvious reasons. So it definitely, like you said, it was a clout thing. Like, she's doing it to you know, get some attention, and it worked. But I think she was fined quite heavily as well. So, I mean, lesson learned, I guess. But yeah, very silly thing to do.
It is. But the way I see it is, if you guys are going to ban Russian players, then boy, we need to ban a whole lot of players, a whole lot of countries, because I'm sorry, Russia is not the only one to be running, doing madness. Like, I'm really, really sorry.
No, she's still.
It's fucked up what's happening. That's annoying things. That once you, when you point that out, people think you're like pro-Russia. I'm really not, especially that I am, you know, it's not like, it just doesn't make any sense, like, for me to be pro-Russia, but I just feel like...
Or pro-war, like, yeah.
Pro-war, yeah. Mm. I just feel like, unless a player, like, that's, you know, who was... Unless a player literally voiced, like, I do not care, or, like, I support Putin, like, blah, 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 then, yeah, I get it. But none of the Russian players, except Potapova's clout thing, have actually been moving mad. And she probably even did that because she's probably even tired of the fact that she's being punished. So she probably even said, you know what? Whether I say something, whether I don't, these people are going to get on my neck. Let me just start shaking the table. You never know. I'm not, you never know. You know, like, people can be stubborn like that. So either way, shout out to Wimbledon doing what they got to do.
Indeed.
If people are upset, then they should just cough up the millions for Wimbledon to pay the fines. And then they'll happily not do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just happily do it. You know, since you guys feel like it's that easy to get to ban the whole thing, I am interested to see how we will go during the Olympics though. So we'll see about that.
Oh yeah, of course. That's next year, isn't
it? Next year.
Paris, yeah. I mean, I think as it stands, I don't think Russians are allowed to compete unless they compete under an independent or neutral flag. So yeah, but
the thing is that people don't want them to play
at all.
And it's like,
So I guess we'll see. We'll see.
We shall see.
But yeah, let's get into the show now. So like you said at the start, there's a lot to cover. But like, yeah, don't be afraid. Like, it's not gonna be like a long episode. Like, we're gonna basically touch on kind of things that we feel are important, and you know, that we didn't speak about in any depth, obviously post Australian Open. So I want to start with Alicia Parks. She had a great February, I want to say, in Lyon, where she won her first WTA event, which is a WTA 250. So she beat three seeded players en route to the title, including the top seed Caroline Garcia, the French number one.
Yes.
In the final, straight sets.
In her own hometown as well.
Exactly. Very, very impressive with Alicia Parks that week. Like, yeah, she played like just unstoppable tennis.
Yeah, she's
really
good, yeah.
And like, I watched most of her matches during that run. And for the final, I'm not going to lie, Lucy, I did think, wow, this is probably going to be it. Like, in terms of, this is where the run like ends, because Caroline Garcia, you know, top seed.
Yeah, she's been, yeah.
She's top, what, five? Top, she's definitely, yeah, she's, I think she's top five. Well, she was top five at the time. Definitely in the top 10, let's say that. And yeah, Parks just came out, took her out in straight sets. I think the first set went to a tie break, and then the second set was like 6-2 or something, 6-2, 6-3 or something. Mm. So yeah, Parks was just incredible that week. Considering as well, she didn't make the Australian Open main draw, don't forget, because she lost in the second round of qualifying, Even though her ranking at the time, she was in the top 100, but obviously the cutoff pre-Australian Open qualifying draw, she wasn't in the top 100 at the time. So she was one of those unlucky players that missed out on the main draw.
Yeah.
So to kind of bounce back from that kind of disappointment of not making the Australian Open, you know, to go off to Europe and then, you know, put an insane work in Lyon and win the tournament. Just a great run, and like, just really a good look for Parks. She hasn't won a match, or she's won one match since Lyon, one singles match anyway. She's played a bit of doubles in between, which is great. But yeah, she struggled on the single side. And I don't think that's like, it's not much to be concerned about. Obviously, it's never good when you're losing matches, but I don't think it's anything to kind of be worried about as such, because this is like the early stages of her career, like as a top 100 player, and
which
kind of,
I think a lot of people forget as well. Like, it's so funny seeing like people saying like, "Oh my gosh, like, what is Parks doing? What's happening?" And I'm like, "You didn't even know about her a couple months ago."
We'll talk.
Like, that is literally how, and not even like in a thing like, "Oh, you didn't know about it." It's more of like, it just shows to you how she's literally just starting. Do you get what I mean?
And how quick the rise was. Like, yeah.
Exactly. Like, I think she doesn't get credit for that. Like, people are just moaning and you know, complaining, and you know how tennis can be. But when you, I feel like whenever you're about to do that as a tennis fan, I just highly recommend just take a sit, just relax, sit down, and then take it in and think. Because a lot of times I've noticed that a lot of times that if a player just loses like one or two matches, it's like, but with Alicia Pass, I'm like, she literally just, you know, and the way it's happened so quick so fast, and the fact that she's still won and beat like one of the top players who's ranked number four right now, actually. It's like, I don't know. I'm not too worried. And another thing as well to keep in mind is that she's trying to figure out her own environment as well, because
100%.
You know, like for example, in Lyon, she was alone. You know, she was working. She's been working with different people.
Dad was on the phone.
Physically. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Dad was there supporting her. We know that definitely he was there supporting her and everything. But I'm saying, like, you know, like just right there and in between Lyon till now, you know, she's been working with Jermaine Jenkins as well. You know, she's been in a different stuff, and she's probably playing these tournaments that she hasn't played before, or, you know, she's not really like familiar with. And
no, 100%.
I'm not really worried. It's just like, bro, like this is literally the start, and this is a great fucking start as well.
Like, basically, this year is like, it's a free hit for her because, yeah, like you said, all of these experiences are brand new, like they're firsts. So it's the first time she's been playing in all of these events. So she's literally got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So that's why for me, it's like she's in a very good position because it's like experience that she's going to build and grow from. But also she's a threat. Like, so she can, you know, spring wins against top 10, top five players.
100%.
And it's not that much of a surprise to people like us, obviously, because we've been seeing, like, we've been watching her for a while. And also I don't want to like discredit kind of, you know, the work and like, yeah, effort that she puts in, because it has been a quick rise, but she's worked very hard in order to make that happen. And obviously she's extremely talented as well. So a lot kind of plays into it. But yeah, like you mentioned, so she was working with Jameer Jenkins in Indian Wells and Miami. Again, not the best result. So she did lose in the first round in both events. But again, just good to see Jameer back in the kind of coaching circle. Obviously, Serena's former hitting partner. And yeah, just an all-round good guy as well. Like, so I don't know what the kind of plan is long term, if that's something they're going to continue to do throughout the year, but I think it was just for the Sunshine double, but we'll see like kind of how that kind of progresses, if it does at all. And also she's also working with Josh Evenden, the strength and conditioning coach as well, and that I think that's been a bit of a longer like term relationship in terms of like how long they've been working together. So yeah, and obviously Josh is a brother of Zach Evenden, the tennis coach. And yeah, we all know, you know, Zach knows his stuff. So yeah, the Evenden name is like kind of a name to kind of look out for, I think. Like,
clearly,
just young brothers doing their thing, like in the tennis world, which is great to see. Let's talk about Coco Gauff, actually. So she's been going pretty strongly. Obviously she won an event at the start of the year, which we spoke about in the first pod before Australia. But yeah, since Australia, she's made the quarterfinals in Qatar, had a nice win over Petra Kvitova in the round of 16, which was really impressive. I don't know if you watched any of her like Qatar matches. I know it's a while back, so it's probably difficult to remember, but do you remember
I watched some, not all of them, but I did watch some,
Like, Coco just always like impresses me, like just considering her age and just the way she carries herself on the court, and like, yeah, her kind of growth is something that it's exciting to watch, because we've been lucky to kind of see her from what, 17? Like, is it 17 or 16? I can't remember. It was 17.
But she's 19.
Exactly. So to kind of watch her from 17 to where she is right now, like, again, she's a top 10 player. Like, she's literally just, her place in the top 10 is pretty cemented. So like, yeah, she's a genuine threat, like at all the big events now. Obviously French Open finalist last year. So the clay court season coming up now, which we'll talk about towards the end, you know, she's got some points to defend at Roland Garros, which again, I think tennis players kind of, I think it kind of plays at the back of their mind, but then at the same time, like it's one of those things where you're just there, so you have to play. But I do, I do think it sometimes does play at the back of certain players' minds, and it's understandable, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, for me, Coco, she's done pretty well in doubles as well, as usual. You know, Coco loves her doubles. Her and Jessica Pegula, they made the semis in Dubai. And in Dubai, actually, Coco did beat Madison Keys in the singles event in straight sets. Do you remember much of that match, or did you
watch? I definitely remember watching that match. That was a good one.
I don't know what the head-to-head is, but I want to say Coco leads just about.
I think
about.
Coco leads, yeah.
Because yeah, I remember. I think did Madison beat her in Australia? I think there was a. I think they met in Australia at 250, and I think Keys won. But I think since then Goff has won all the meetings since. But yeah, like just in terms of like Coco, like in her game, where would you say like she's at? Like you. Are you impressed with like what you've seen?
Keys beat her last year in Adelaide. First meeting, but ever since, both in singles and doubles, Coco has been beating her.
Yeah.
In terms of Coco, honestly, with me, it's literally just the same. I think she just needs to like keep going. I think obviously we know the thing is like we know what she just needs to just improve a little bit. I think this year she's improved. At the beginning of the year, she improved a lot on her serve. And then it was kind of like rocky, like a little bit in some of the tournaments. And then it went back up. And then it went like, I think it just depends on the days and who she's playing against. But I also think that people don't give enough credit to the fact that I think people now try to play. They need to have like a proper game plan whenever they play against Coco. And I think that's another thing as well she needs to keep in mind is that people now when they play, the women now when they play against her, okay, I need to have a game plan and I need to make sure that I rattle her. The second they do that, I feel like that's when they easily get to her. And because Coco cares so much, and also in terms of like her getting the pressure, because I think that's another thing that a lot of people don't speak about. I think it gets a lot into her head and then she kind of like frees a little bit. But I think each match she gets better at finding a solution when things get tricky. And I think the last couple of tournaments has kind of shown that. And lastly, it's not like she's losing to silly players. She's literally losing to like big players. Indian Wells, she lost to Sabalenka. That's not like a small thing.
Even before Indian Wells, so Dubai, she lost to Swiatek in the semifinals.
Iga, when I catch you, that's all I'm saying for now.
You sound like one of my aunties.
Listen, no, because I had enough. I really had it. I was just like, no. Like you need to relax.
Oh,
like, what the hell? And that even that match, for instance, and it goes back to my point of me saying that I feel like Coco doesn't get the credit for improving, because that match, that first set, Iga was rattled. I can't remember if it was the first, second set, but there were some couple games where literally Coco was just flying through. And then Iga just swished it up and it was like, fuck. And then, but that was that match. She could have been close to beating her if it wasn't a thing where Iga just switched and then like did her thing. Who else? In Qatar, she lost during the quarterfinals. Australian Open, she lost Ostapenko, who played like a crazy match. So that's the thing. If she was losing to like players who were doing the bare minimum, I could understand. But when you actually sit there, it goes back to what I'm saying. When you're about to talk shit, sit down, look back and think, okay, what has actually been going on? And when you look at the way she's been playing and improving is that it shows that we're going to get there. Like she's still working towards something.
100%.
working well in doubles. She still won a title beginning of this year. And, you know,
as we speak right now, so not to cut you, she's in the doubles
final in Miami. This is what I'm saying. And that's still something. Like, she's still 100%. Doing these things. And these doubles matches are definitely helping her because she's getting better at the net as well. The only thing for me, she just needs to just work. Like, the things for me, I feel like that will definitely help her moving forward are her serves, definitely. Obviously her forehand, and also having like a game plan if it's a situation where if what she's trying to go for is not working, we go for something else. Like, but I think plan B, I feel like she goes for plan A and just try and stick to that. And even when she sticks to that, even if that plan A don't work, like, it's weird, like, she will stick to that plan A but just like force it like even harder, and then it works. But then when you're playing against big players like Igor or Sabalenka, you need to come up with something else. But all of that, it comes with age as well. Like, again, she just turned 19. Like, she's still like, when you like, Coco is smart, but she still has like a lot to do in terms of like maturity. And I think that that will help her game as well, because when things are not going her way, you can tell the players like an easy get, like, players can easily get to her head
and pounce as well. Yeah.
Honestly, again, I'm not too worried. I'm really looking forward for clay season. I think she's going to be doing really.
She's great, a problem on clay. Definitely. Yeah,
exactly. So that's me anyway. That's what I
think. That's a lovely overview, Lucy. So thank you. But yeah, like we alluded to, so they're playing a doubles final right now in Miami. Mm-hmm. So Goff and Pegula, they're playing against Taylor Townsend, shouts out. And Leila Fernandez, you've had a great, well, fortnight. Because, yeah, Miami is like a two-week event, you know. Like, it's a long one.
Yeah, it is long.
But, yeah, they've had a great tournament. So that's a nice, like, final there. So either way, we're winning, you know. We're going to have a black winner, which is great. Mm-hmm. So, but, yeah, I think Coco, like you said, clay court season coming up, like, that's where I think she's going to do a lot of damage. And yeah, she has a lot of points to defend. But I still feel like, yeah, she will do a lot of like good things and impressive things like during the clay court season. So we look forward to that. Just quickly, actually, back to Parks. She played doubles with Sloane Stephens in Texas.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I want to say.
They started really well, but they ended up losing in the first round.
I forgot about that. Yeah, they did play together. Yeah.
I thought that was such a great like partnership. Like, they looked, really, like.
Remember, I was saying that I feel like Stevens is going to be playing a lot more doubles. It seems like it.
You did.
I'm wondering why, but I'm not mad at it. But yeah,
to be honest, we did kind of get like an inside scoop. Like, we knew it was going to happen a while ago.
We knew it was going to happen. So, that's true.
So, but we just didn't say anything. But you did say before then that, yeah, you feel like that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's something we see more of going forward. I know Sloane is playing more doubles now, like, than she used to back in the day. So, and I think that's a good thing. Like,
definitely.
It's nice to see singles players playing doubles. So, that's nice to see. Robin Montgomery. So someone we've spoken about, well, in the past, she's a junior, or she was a junior now, making her way in the kind of pro or WTA tour. She got her first WTA tour win in Miami, which is obviously a WTA 1000, it's a big event. And that was a nice comeback win against Anna Bogdan, who is a top 100 player. So Montgomery was actually a set down, and I want to say a break in the second set as well, but she came back and won that in three sets. So a very, very impressive win. And I think I watched from like the second set, and had some other things going on in the background, so I wasn't paying full attention, but I was very impressed with like what I saw with Montgomery. Like, she looked like an established like player, like, who's been out there for a minute, even though she's like just starting out. And I want to say this is her seventh or eighth main draw match on the WTA tour, and yeah, she's finally got that win. And in the second round, she played Madison Keys, and Keys ended up winning in straight sets. I don't know if you saw one of our photos on IG. Let me just get it up because it made me laugh. So when we posted about Montgomery, one of the comments was like, oh, have you seen who she's got in the next round?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. I remember that. And apparently, I didn't watch the match, but I remember seeing people tweeting about it. Apparently, it was a pretty good match.
Yeah. I want to say it was six. It was straight sets, but yeah, Montgomery played well. And I think the experience is going to do her like the world of good, just because it's going to give her a lot of experience, not experience, but confidence kind of going forward, knowing that, yeah, she's got that win now. Mm-hmm. It was a wild card that she got into Miami. So yeah, she made the most of that wild card. So shouts out to Montgomery. Mm. And it was 6-4, 6-4 for Keys in that match. Also, shouts out to Madison Keys. She's engaged, which we haven't spoken about. So,
oh yeah, I think I'm.
She's engaged. It's Bjorn Fantangelo, who's also a tennis player, American. So we do like that tennis couples.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Alina and Gail, and now Madison and Bjorn.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we haven't had that for we've had like boyfriend girlfriends, but we haven't had like a married one in a very long time.
Well, since Gail and Cesarina, no?
Okay, before Gail and Elena, has been a very long time.
Okay.
Since it was like a married, I think the last big one was Eva, Roger and his wife, but then again, she even retired. Or what's her name? That legend. Oh, fuck. Steffi Graf and...
Who's her husband again? Yeah, Andre Agassi. Yeah. That's a good point, actually. It's a good shout.
A lot of boyfriend girlfriends, many, I think. But yeah,
like married tennis couples.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, that's for Robin Montgomery. And like, again, just a name to look out for. And I think she's going to be someone we'll be seeing a lot more of because she's 18 now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that ranking is only going to continue to like keep going up. And I think, yeah, maybe around like the US hard court swing, we'll start to see more of her because I'm guessing she'll get more wild cards in the US. So yeah, just look out and obviously keep going, Robin, like doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly on the women, I want to shout out Claire V. Ngunwe. So she won the Indian Wells Junior event, which is a quite prestigious event. And she also won the doubles too. So she won both the singles and doubles.
Mm-hmm.
And she won the doubles with her partner, Javier Lopez. And she's definitely someone we'll be seeing a lot more of like in the near future. Let's go on to the guys now, the men. And I want to start with another Frenchman, Arthur Fils. He's about to crack the top 100, which is great. Yeah. So he had an amazing, I want to say February again, just basically made back-to-back semifinals, the ATP 250s in France, indoor event. So the first one was Montpellier. That was probably the most impressive run. So he beat Richard Gasquet, Roberto Bautista Agut, and Quintin Ellis, another Frenchman. He lost in the semifinals. And then the following week, he backed that run up in Marseille. He had wins over, Russian, Roman Safulin, and Stanislas Wawrinka, obviously a former, three-time Grand Slam champion. He lost in the semifinals there. I think he lost to Yannick Sinner in Montpellier. Yeah.
And then he had a wild card as well.
Yeah. And then the following week, he was due to play Sinner in the quarterfinal, I want to say. But Sinner pulled out before they played. So he got a walkover, which was, I guess, lucky. But that would have been cool to see, them playing week after week in consecutive weeks. But probably was relieved to like not have to play him. I think Fils is a player we're going to see a lot more of as well. Very exciting game.
Yeah, the French were so happy.
I
saw like a lot of French like publications like talking about him and stuff, and he seemed pretty excited as well. So yeah, it was really nice to see him win.
Because I remember we said, I think I said, he'll probably break the top 100 or be close to breaking the top 100 by the end of the year.
He did.
Like he's literally like, I want to say he's 110. He's like in the one. he's basically about to. So within the next few months, he's probably going to be a top 100 player, which is great.
Especially that he's coming into Europe and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to seeing him on the clay as well, because I think he's I want to say a French Open junior finalist a few years ago. So he knows.
So he's ranked 109 right now.
See? Yeah. So he's literally knocking on the door, which is great to see. And again, another French, I think his dad's Haitian. So a lot of like French, Haitian, so a lot of Haitians in the tennis scene right now. Obviously, Naomi Osaka, our guy Eric, and yeah, now Arturo, which is fantastic. So yeah, massive shouts out to Feast, and yeah, we look forward to seeing him on the European clay. Mm-hmm. Christopher Eubanks, man, he's been the story of tennis like for the past 2 weeks. So yeah, Miami, like the dream run in Miami, qualifier. He was also working for Tennis Channel, like doing like commentating at the same time. But they probably did allow him to kind of say, you know what, you concentrate on your tennis because you're going deep. which makes sense. But yeah, Eubanks, he made the quarterfinals in Miami, which was, I want to say that's the first quarterfinal he's reached on the ATP tour. So to be doing that like at a Masters event after coming through qualifying, like that's pretty much,
especially that the start of this year was a bit rocky as well, and then he just
but he's pretty much played like a Grand Slam. That's like a Grand Slam like event he's played, if you think about, because qualifying you're going to play what, two matches to qualify or three? And then he's won those matches in the main draw to get to the quarterfinals. He lost to Daniil Medvedev, who I want to say has won. Has he just won Miami?
Yeah, he just won Miami, yeah. Which so, I expected him to win that. But yeah, so, I mean, hey, losing to
the eventual champ.
Not only he won, like I said earlier, Medvedev has been on hella smoke from the beginning of this season, especially on hard court. So, I mean, they're trying to call him a hard court specialist. He called himself a hard court specialist.
Even though he was like corn in the courts. Was it Indian Wells or Miami?
It was Indian Wells. He was like, yeah, me, yeah. Because I know, because I'm a specialist.
Even if it's a very slow one, it's an hard court.
I know what is hard court. I'm a specialist.
He's such a character.
He's a funny guy. He's a funny cat.
Yeah, but so honestly, losing to and the second set went pretty longer as well. I was really tired. And things about Eubanks is that the good thing is that more people are known about him, because when I was reading the comments from people, they were like, oh, like Eubanks have all of these like tactics and skills.
How come he's quite is that?
He is. And it's like, what? Basically people were just not understanding, like, wow, like, okay, this guy's on job. So what's going on?
I think
Miami Open definitely will give him like the boost and stuff, because now he obviously has more fans, and you know, he's feeling it, that like the momentum is there, and he's probably even more motivated. So I'm really happy for him, like reaching the quarterfinals at Miami Open as well, like now, 1,000.
He's now a top 100 player as well for the first time in his career.
He's like 102. He's 100 and something.
But I'm saying, come Monday, he'll be in the top 100.
Oh, okay, yeah. Got it.
So,
okay,
and that'll be the first time he's ever cracked the top 100. And he was crying about, well, I say crying, he was very emotional. After the match that confirmed that. I want to say that was the fourth round match that he won.
That was really special. It just shows to you like how bad he's been wanting this. And I'm really happy for him, honestly.
Yeah, it's a really good look. And it's like he kind of brought all like the stars, like Jamie Foxx was at his match, or one of his matches.
In the money in the tank.
Is this a tennis podcast or music podcast?
On his up high. Yo, Blame It by Jamie Foxx, it's a legendary song. Shout out to Jamie Foxx. Very talented individual. But yeah, it was dope seeing him there.
Chad Ochocinco as well. He was at one of the matches.
Yes, he was
on
there.
The outside courts recording. I think he posted.
Listen, the black celebrities, once they see the black tennis player, they're going to be there.
I mean, I respect it. I like it. Because I think, again, that kind of draws the eyes. As in their followers that aren't necessarily tennis fans. They're like, oh, shit, hang on a minute. Where was he? He's at a tennis match.
Exactly.
Like, do you get me? Who's he watching? Yeah. And then, again, that's a new fan or new fans for Christopher Eubanks now. So I love that. And I just think, it's just funny, like, when you do see, like, a celebrity, like, in the stands, like, you kind of know who they're rooting for, especially when a black player is playing. Like, let's just call it what it is. Like,
yeah, 100%.
That's great. And I think, with Eubanks now, like you said, I think this run in Miami is going to give him, like, a lot of confidence going forward because, it's showing that, like, he can compete with, like, these guys. And I did watch a few of his matches and I was like, of course, like, tennis is a grind. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's played a lot of hit. Well, most of his tennis has been played on, like, the Challenger Tour, and, like, the Challenger Tour is tough. Like, they just don't get the same kind of coverage, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But do not get it twisted. Like, that they're playing a high level of tennis, and that's pretty much where he's, like, grinded, like, his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And he did come through the college system too, which I think is also kind of helped him along the way. But now I do feel like, he will kind of push on now and kind of establish himself in the top 100, which is obviously, you know, a career goal. So, he's got the game, like, to do it. He's big serve, very good at the net, comfortable at the net. He serve volleys, like, you don't really get.
He's
many.
Mad tall as well. So
yeah, he's like six.
He's like 6 foot.
He's a basketball player height.
I
want to say 6'4", 6'5". He's a big guy. So, he's got pretty much all the attributes you kind of need. Like,
bro, he's 6'7".
Jeez, see, he's a bloody forward.
He's
a bloody forward. Like, that's mad. So, I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Christopher Eubanks. And hopefully, this year he can really kick on. Francis Tiafoe. What a week he had in Indian Wells. Semi-finalist again, his first Masters 1000 semi-final. I really thought, to be honest, Lucy, before, this is going to sound crazy, but I had a feeling either him, as in Francis, Felix Auger Aliassime, or Coco Gauff, I had a feeling one of those three would win it. I just had, like, there was something in me that was saying, "Oh, we're gonna get a black winner here." Like, I felt
that mainly for Tiafoe and a little bit for Coco,
really,
especially
not,
Tiafoe.
Not Felix, yeah.
Felix,
we'll talk about Felix later, but
yeah. Okay, I'll explain later why, but definitely more for Felix.
So why Francis?
He was playing so well. Like, the shots were, like, crazy. The energy was great as well.
The fit too. Let's talk about the fit quickly.
And the fit
Cinnamon swirl? Like,
again, man, I don't even know what it was, but again, he came dripped the fuck down. Like, Francis, just keep it up this year. Just keep on with the drip. Like,
he's setting a standard.
We're loving
like,
this. Yeah, like, keep doing it. And I feel like it gives you that boost as well. Like, listen, when you dress well and you're feeling yourself,
look good,
you're going to, you know,
we'll
exactly. Oh, that is it right there. You do. That's the right bar. But another reason why as well is that I'm actually surprised I did not start with this. It was the speed of that damn court.
Yeah. I did see your tweets actually. Yeah.
Bro, I was going insane. Everybody was complaining. Everyone. That was why Medvedev was being dramatic about. It was just Indian Wells. That was the... I couldn't take it anymore. Like, it was actually... It was just ridiculous. It was like, I can't watch these matches. Like, it was... And it was annoying because there were so many great matches. Because of the speed of the court, though, it was just making... I was just like, you're Indian Wells. Like, you're saying you're big people. Why are you giving me court like this? But I made this tweet even on my personal account and I literally said, I do hate the speed of the court. However, when Tiafo is playing, I'm not too mad because this is, you know, the speed of that goal. It was really, it did. Do you get what I mean? So it's like, I was 100% being a hypocrite. 100%. Yeah, I was.
Which is fine.
Which is fine. I will happily do it for my black players. So I hated it, but it was definitely a plus. So that is another reason why I thought he's going to bag this, because I feel like, I think all of the players struggled with the speed of that court, except Tiafo. I think Tiafo was the only player that felt extremely comfortable with it. And he was able to showcase a lot more of like his skills and stuff. Like a lot of players, for example, they were relying on their drop shots for them to like, you know, hit some winners. Whereas when you have someone like Tiafo, who's great at both drop shots and hitting some winners, it was just like a win-win for him. Whereas for other winners, they couldn't even, the other players, they couldn't even hit any winners. So it was just like doing them drop shots. And it was just that Fritz drop shot during that tournament, ew, that it was not given. Like, sorry, respectfully. but whereas when you had Tiafo, he was doing his job. So that's why I really thought, when I looked at his draw, when I looked at the speed of the court, when I looked at the way he was playing and also the atmosphere, you know, people love Tiafo now.
Yeah.
I was like,
he's a big ticket. Yeah.
This is, you know, this is for him. This is it.
Yeah.
Medvedev as well, out of nowhere, decided to play extremely well when he was playing against Tiafo. I don't know. It's giving a little, Medvedev, I like you. When you play against niggas, there's something. There is something. There is something. I'm not projecting, but like, I'm projecting.
Like you just said, he lost to Medvedev in the semi-final. Again, the eventual, no, Medvedev was the runner-up. So Alcaraz won Indian Wells, but
yes.
That was a 5-7, 6-7 defeat for Tiafo. So
that was,
He went down fighting. Like, and I think that's probably the closest match he's played with Medvedev. Today.
Yeah, it was it was really close. It was really close. But at the same time, I'm not gonna lie, Alcaraz as well starting giving hella smoke. The way Alcaraz was playing, I was like, if you did this against Tiafo, I would have lost my mind. So yeah.
Yeah, Alcaraz was a joke in Indian Wells.
Fam, that guy is something else. Shout out to him for winning.
Big time. But yeah, we're back to Francis. Like he's getting it in. So Jill Smoller, obviously Serena's former, or I say former, she probably still is her like agent or manager. I don't know what you'd really call the official term.
Jill is her agent, but I won't be surprised if they're still working like together.
Yeah,
of course. So Serena likes money.
Who doesn't?
She should.
So yeah, Jill Smoller's now, Tiafo is now under Jill Smoller's wing. And yeah, he's been getting all the endorsements. So
this past month alone, I've seen like 3 endorsements. I'm like, and that's why it's the last part. Jill, keep letting my nigga get paid.
I've seen Stella Artois, the beer company.
Yeah.
And Chevrolet, the car, American car.
Yes, car. Manager. Yep.
Yeah. So and I want to say there were more, but for me,
I think he's part of Calvin Klein as well.
Okay, nice.
There's some other brands. I can't think of the top of my head, but there's other brands as well. Because like every time he's just, you know, introducing and stuff. And I'm like, get that money.
Real talk.
Because the thing is, at the end of the day, he's very, you know, like people love his personality. Some even say it's even too much. You get what I mean? But get that money, boy.
100%. Like, yeah, there's a lot to sell there. Like in terms of, like you said, the personality.
And that's where
the
tennis players get their money as well. Think 100%. About the endorsements.
Yeah. Yeah. So continue to do that, Francis. Mm-hmm. Like we're rooting for you. And obviously, yeah, we are big fans, as everybody knows. So yeah, I think, again, he's on the verge of cracking top 10. And I think that's going to happen this year.
100%. Easy.
And from there, it's like literally when you're in the top 10, as Felix has kind of shown, he's been an established top 10 player now for a while. Like you're pretty much, you're in the running for winning all the big events. So I do now feel like France is kind of getting that kind of reputation of being not just like a threat, like, oh yeah, this is someone who could potentially do something. He's now seen as someone that, can go deep. and win, you know, the big titles. So, and yeah, I feel like 2023, he's got a few titles like on, well, his name's on a few titles this year. So God willing, like he pulls through and does, you know, bag a couple. Felix now, let's talk about Felix quickly. So he was the defending champ in Rotterdam. But he did end up losing in the quarterfinals to the eventual champion. Again, you can guess who that was, Daniil Medvedev. And then he literally went on to reach the semifinals the following week in Qatar. And again, who did he lose to? Eventual champ.
Medvedev.
So, like...
What did I say? I told you. He sees nigger and he's like, no.
It's just
get out,
complete assassin, like, yeah,
no blacks.
Turns. Just
Daniel looks at somebody that says blacks. he might not say the n-word, but he 100% looks at somebody and be like, no blacks, no blacks.
The thing is, yeah, and I don't want to bring it back to me, but like he reminds me of someone I used to play tennis with back in the day, and he was Russian. Like they have a very similar vibe. Like they're quite he was quite quirky. Like, yeah. And that what you just said, it kind of like it triggered me, because that's
I am telling you, he gets on that call, he sees a nigga, he's like, nah, man, you gotta go.
But yeah, Medvedev has been on job.
He's been on job. Like, yeah. No, honestly, he's been on job. I've always said this. I'm happy seeing that, you know, anyone besides the big three and like younger people, because that's the thing. Medvedev looks like an uncle, but that guy's like younger than me. He's like, yeah, what? He's 20, 25, 24?
Mid-20s, yeah.
Oh, I lied. He's 27, sorry. But he's so young. He's literally the same age as me. But he literally looks like he's older, to me anyways, my opinion.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's nice that he's doing this. So, yeah.
This kind of feels like a Daniil Medvedev podcast. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Hell fucking no.
We spent a lot of time talking about Daniil Medvedev.
Listen. It shows that he's been on job. Like, there's nothing that we can do about that. The guy who's just been winning. It's like, who's, and at least our players are losing to someone who's dominating.
I always say, there's no, obviously you don't want to lose a match, but there's no shame in losing to the eventual champion.
I feel the same. Facts. Yeah. I feel the same. Honestly speaking, he's been on different smoke. So, but hey, clay season is coming, which I don't think is his strongest thing.
I don't think he likes the clay, but
yeah, we'll see. He doesn't really like clay, and obviously he doesn't like snow courts as well. So clay's not, it's not really his thing. So you never know. We might do our next pod and not speak about Daniel at all.
We'll see. But back we'll to see. Felix. Back to Felix. So yeah, he did make the quarters in Indian Wells, or at Indian Wells, and then he lost to the eventual champion there, which is Carlos Alcaraz. Did you watch that match?
I don't think I watched a lot of Felix's matches in Indian Wells.
A lot of his matches
were at dumb times.
Yeah. And there was, well, Miami was the rain delay. Just hella rain delays in Miami. But
yeah.
I watching that Alcaraz match, Felix actually played really well, Lucy. This is the thing. Like,
but it's just Alcaraz has been.
Alcaraz is just, oh man.
Bro, when that guy's on smoke, yeah, it's just like you
kinda
can't even
unplayable.
Hate it. It's just like, fuck.
Kinda
just,
unplayable.
It's just like, fuck.
But, I mean, let's think back to the US Open last year in that semi final against Tiafoe. Like, five sets. Tiafoe could have won that match. And Tiafoe knew, like, there was an opportunity.
I personally think the only reason why Tiafoe lost that match was just pressure and the fact that, you know, what's
the moment.
First. There was a lot of first when he wants to reach that level. First American in the wild, first black player in decades, tie break stuff, you know, and it was US Open. It was an American. It's a lot. It's a lot happening, a lot to take in.
But with Felix, though, I do like the matchup with Carlos, because before that quarterfinal in Indian Wells, Felix had a 3-0 record against Alcaraz. So he literally played him three times and beaten him all three times. I know there was a retirement there, I think the US Open a couple of years ago. But yeah, the other matches, Felix beat him. and like I don't want to say comprehensively.
But I didn't know that actually.
They were wins. So this was
both of them straight sets.
This was Alcaraz's first win against
Felix.
Okay. And obviously Alcaraz is the top seed, is number one in the world. Well, not anymore, is he number one? I think he's gone back down to number two.
Yeah, he's gone back down. He's number two.
But in terms of the matchup, like it was just really, it was just very exciting. Like that, it was funny as well. I did tweets about it. There was a point where, or kind of sequence of points where they were just both hitting unbelievable winners, like forehand winners from the baseline. I think Alcaraz hit one like backhand, like passing shot, and like he apologized. Like, and I was like, why are you apologizing? And then Felix, he also hit like a wicked, I think it was a forehand cross court winner, like clean winner. And like, again, he put up his hand as well. I was like, why are these guys apologizing? When they're clean winners? But it was just funny. Like, that just shows the kind of respect they have, like, for each other. Obviously,
I think this is why I also really love Alcaraz matches, because of how he is, the players he even plays against are like, nah, we need to, like, you know, do you get what I mean? Like, they come 100%. With head of smoke. So at the end, it ends up being a fantastic match. Although I didn't watch it, I'm pretty sure it was one great match. Like, even to be honest, even one of my favorite matches of the year was just recently, was Alcaraz and Sinner. And bro, that match was insane. But
is it, you know, Miami?
It was Miami. It was the semifinals. Yeah. Sinner obviously beat him. But I'm not going to, like, it was late, and the energy from the match is what actually, like, kept me up. I was like, nah, this is crazy. So it's really nice to see that Felix and Alcaraz was able to, like, give that. And I just want, we just want more of this. Like,
100%, man.
Tennis is in good fucking hands, man. I was just going to say,
like, of course, the big three are, like, no longer there. With Federer retiring. But, like, yeah, Nadal's kind of on the end or near the end of his career. Novak is still there, obviously. But, like you just said, tennis is in such great shape, like with Alcaraz, Sinner, Felix, Francis, Holger Rune. Like, there's so many players, Tsitsipas. Like, there's so many good, like, players at the top of men's tennis at the moment. And I think it's very exciting. It's an exciting time. So, with Felix, though, like, he did lose in Miami, I think, to Chirondolo. In the third round.
Was it not Sonego? No, that was Indian Wells. Yeah, you were right. Cerundolo.
The Argentine. And yeah, that was tough. Like, but I'm not reading too much into that. And I think, again, the clay, well, being back in Europe, he's obviously Canadian, but he does live in Monte Carlo. Like, I think it's gonna do him some good being back in Europe. Yeah.
I'm looking forward for clay with.
And I think he will do some damage on the clay as well. Like, I know he hasn't really had any tournament wins or big tournament wins on the clay as of yet. I don't think they've all come on like indoor hard courts. But yeah, I think he's got the game to kind of do well on the clay. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does make a run at the French Open, for instance. Obviously, that's a few weeks away, but before the French, Madrid, Rome, like, those big ATP Masters 1000s, like, I think, we could be seeing a nice kind of run of matches there for Felix. So, just good to see. And lastly, Gael Monfils. Sad. Obviously, this was his first tournament back in Indian Wells after 7 months away. I want to say 7 months, six, 7 months.
Quite a few long, yeah.
It was a while. But yeah, he did lose to...
Since August, yeah.
Yeah, he did lose to Jordan Thompson in the first round at Indian Wells. And then he unfortunately retired from his first round match in Miami. I think it was due to a wrist injury, which he said is nothing serious. It was just like precautionary. So... Mm-hmm. Because I think the injury that kept him out for those 7 months was a foot injury, which has kind of plagued him like throughout his career, really.
I think I can't remember if it was rumors or it was him saying, kind of like hinting, like, he's kind of tired and he might, like, you know.
No, I did see that. You see, that's a blob. Come on, man.
Oh, that was a blog thing.
That was a tennis blog. Yeah, some tennis blog. So he's rubbish.
Yeah, that's why I said, I don't know if it was him or it was like...
No, he's rubbish. Like he said, he'll be back for the clay. So we look forward. And again, he'll be back in Europe, you know, back with his is it a son they've got? Or it is a son, isn't it? Not a daughter. I don't know.
I think it's a daughter.
Oh, really? Okay, so back with the newborn. I think even Alina's coming back as
She's back this summer with a new coach as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't remember who's a coach, but I know she has a new coach. And well,
that is a quick turnaround. Fair play.
Listen, so, motherhood sometimes boosted people. Maybe that's what she needs.
Yeah.
Or she's scared of enjoying motherhood. Next, you know, you're like, you know what? Tennis, bye.
But yeah, I want to say that kind of, that wraps up everything. I mean, obviously a lot has happened, but I feel like these were the kind of main events, like, and there's so much that has happened obviously since we've last recorded, but I think, we've kind of touched on like the main kind of things that have kind of, gone down. And if we have missed anything, apologies, but.
Why are you putting down the nigga? We have our Instagram. If you miss something, it's up there. And if you don't know, then go follow our Instagram and our Twitter, period. But yeah, we've done our thing. How did you feel about the sunshine double? Because personally, it wasn't really my favorite. Despite the fact that TFO reached the semifinals.
I enjoyed it. Miami was a bit more of a struggle to watch just because of like the rain delays.
Yeah.
I mean, I love when tournaments are in the US just because the way how my kind of sleep pattern set up, like I'm up quite late. So it's nice to kind of come back from work and watch matches like into the early hours. Miami was tough because of the rain. I did enjoy Indian Wells, and not just because of Francis. Obviously, Francis was amazing, like reaching the semifinals. But there's something about Indian Wells, even though it was last year. Do you remember the whole drama with Naomi Osaka, with the fan howling at her? Do you remember?
Oh yes.
And obviously, we all know the history there with the Williams sisters as well. Like,
and that is why for me, Indian Wells, when everybody prays for it, I'm like,
really? You don't fuck with it?
Oh! Ever since that Serena thing. It's so funny because one of my friend who does not even watch tennis or nothing, like I remember I was telling him like, oh yeah, this, because he was so, because he lives in America, so he was trying to like, I was trying to tell him about the tennis tournaments in America, and then I was like, yeah, there's Indian Wells, and he was like, nah, I don't know what it is, but that name is sounding racist as fuck. I was like, well, you're not wrong. But it was so funny how he said that. And he doesn't know shit about tennis. Obviously doesn't know. I mean, he knows like minimum, but you know, he doesn't know obviously the history of like Indian Wells, but it just shows to you like that is so deep. It's so deep into that. Even the name is like, that does not sound nigger friendly to me, but I'm a C, but I've always felt some type of way about Indian Wells personally.
Fair enough, man.
Even when Serena decided to go back, I was like, yeah, you can be cool, but I'm not.
We never forget.
You can forgive, but I ain't forget.
So what weren't you feeling about it then in terms of both? Like, were you just not as excited?
Do you know what it was? Miami Open specifically wasn't just a tournament. It wasn't the tournament. It was more of like a lot of the matches for me were predictable.
Interesting. Okay.
Like a lot of the times when I was looking at the draw, like, okay, who's playing? I was like, this person's going to win. That person's going to win. That person's going to win. And at the end, I was literally right. Do you get what I mean? And
all right then. So did you put any bets down?
Do you know what?
I don't want to endorse that. So maybe don't put this in the pod. But like,
Blackspin does not endorse betting. But I was like, damn, if I was into betting, I could have won some money. Like honestly, like, I was looking at just like, but a lot of people did say that they felt like it was a little bit predictable. At least with Indian Wells, I feel like we were ripped off better matches because of the speed of the court for me. Okay. And I think that's what the speed of the court is what ruined Indian Wells for me. But there was some really, really good like match like setup like there and stuff. Miami Open, I just felt like by then it was just a little bit more predictable for me. But yeah, that was it for me.
Give Kvitova, she won Miami.
That was not predictable.
She beat Rybakina.
She beat Rybakina. I thought Rybakina was going to win, especially after Iga pulled out. I thought Rybakina was going to win that. I did not expect Petra to win. I'm going to be honest. I didn't expect Petra to win anything for a very long time. I thought it would be a thing where she's like, you know what? I'm out. But I'm happy for her. I think after like her incident with her hand or wrist, I can't remember what it was years ago. I think that took a toll on her mentally. So whenever she wins, I'm happy. So yeah, and shout out to her for winning that.
Obviously the men's side, you've spoken a lot about him. Might as well call the pod Daniel Medvedev, but yeah, Daniel Medvedev.
We might just call this episode Medvedev at this point.
Did you not see him winning then? Or did you think Alcaraz going back to back? Because I think people thought Rybakina would, because Rybakina won the Indian Wells, and they thought, oh yeah, she'll probably do the double and win Miami as well. But obviously, Kvitova.
I saw Medvedev winning because he's really been wanting to win a 1000. And I think him losing Indian Wells definitely got up to him. So I saw him winning Miami Open. I felt like he just got like that little boost. Out of everyone this year in terms of the men's, he's been killing it in terms of hard court. And Indian Wells, you need to remember again, like I said, the fact that the court was slow is what I think that's what fucked him up really and truly. I think if it was more to his speed, I think he would have probably won Indian Wells. And Carlos remember, he was injured. He didn't play Australian Open. So he had a little bit more rest. You know, he had a little bit more things. So it was a little bit easier for him to win Indian Wells. And the momentum was there as well. So yeah, I wasn't too surprised seeing Medvedev winning this final. I think even if he played Carlos again, he would have 100% won again.
Let's talk quickly about the clay before we wrap up. So yeah, we move to clay now.
Yes,
there are events still in America though, which is great. So Charleston, which is one of my favorite events.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. So obviously we'll break it more down. We'll break it all down on like the socials, but just quickly. Yeah, Parks is in that draw. I want to say Madison Keys as well. Sloane Stephens. So a lot of players to look out for. How do you see that going? I think Pegula's the top seed. Wim Jabeur's in there as well. Azarenka, like some big hitters. Like, because it's a one, I think it's a 500. So it's always a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Charleston.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually.
I'm
actually looking forward to clay. I got tired of the hard because I move over. Let's bring some sliders, some dirt,
the dirt
into this. But yeah. Also, I was really surprised to see that Tiafo is not playing for Estoril.
No, he's playing Houston, so he's a top seed in Houston.
I thought he was great because last year he was there to the finals. So I was really looking forward. I was like, yeah. That's actually a tournament I love to visit, by the way.
Estoril.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I really like mainly because of the energy. The energy is like really great there.
It's a nice part of Portugal as well.
Like, one of my friend and I were speaking about it. He was even saying at first, he was like, yeah, the vibe there is crazy. And I'm just like, you know what? Now that I think about it, it's actually pretty, especially like last year and stuff.
Yeah,
they really love Tiafo. They really love like, you know, how everything went. But maybe one day.
That was one that got away though, definitely. But yeah, he's nice segue. He's in Houston. So he's the top seed there. So he gets a bye into the second round. So he'll play either Steve Johnson or Facundo Bagnis in round two.
Is Houston clay? Or
Yeah. It's all clay now. But yes, American clay. So I want to see who else is in that draw? Wow. Okay. So it looks like just TFO in there. Is Eubanks in there? Oh, no Eubanks. And I think Mo's still out injured as well. So shouts out to Mo. And yeah, I hope the recovery is going well. Mm. Marrakesh. I've seen an Immer brother in there. I think he's playing qualifying. So that must be Elias.
Okay.
So yeah, there's Marrakesh to also look out for. But yeah, I don't think anyone is in there.
I swear last year, Felix played it, but it doesn't look like he's playing it again.
Yeah, he's not playing this year.
Yeah, there's no niggas.
Wait. until next, I think he's going to wait until next week. Not sure what the event is next week, but yeah.
It's Monte Carlos, I believe.
Oh, really? Next week? Wow.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's Monte Carlos.
After, it's come around so quick.
Bro, time is going fast so quickly. Just a little update, Fernandez and Townsend and Coco and Pegula 6-6.
First set.
Tight. Yeah, still the first.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch that.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching that as soon as we're done. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah, Lucy, I think that pretty much wraps up. So, like I said, we'll be doing a more substantial kind of breakdown as usual, like on the socials with all the events, upcoming and clay court events. Mm. But yeah, no, I'm glad we got through that show, that Since You've Been Gone episode. Like,
since you've been gone, I just get...
Sing it, girl.
Sing again, my Diddy.
You got a nice voice, Lucy.
Do you know what? All jokes aside, yeah, guys, in all seriousness, if I actually did the singing thing properly, like if I practiced from young till now, I think I've been able to like sing
properly. Fair play.
Honestly.
Fair play. You know, I was in the choir, like when really? I was in primary school, yeah. But then my voice broke. So
do you wanna give us like a little test?
No. See, my voice is broken now, so I don't have the same voice I had back when I was like what, 9, 10? So that ain't happening. But no, you can hold a note though, definitely.
Yeah, I'm trying. You
I respect
know.
It. But yeah, guys, and thank you as always for tuning in. And yeah, we won't leave it so long next time. Is that, have I shot myself in the foot by saying that?
No, because... we definitely won't, because okay. And also I'm really excited for the next pod, you know?
True, yeah, we're switching up a bit, but we will talk more.
You'll see a little surprise.
You'll see next episode
the price of the bricks going up.
But yeah, guys, I mean, appreciate you as always. So yeah, until next time, take care and enjoy all the tennis that is upcoming.